Welcome to the Rotating Platform. It is 16th of October 2014. It's episode 4 of our podcast. And I am joined by
Matthew Castle
and
Alan Madrill.
And is this a good time to mention that we're in esteemed company?
You can mention it if you want. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah, like hell you would. Yeah.
So tell us a story.
Yeah.
So last night I won 2 awards at the Games Media Awards.
I was
celebrated by my peers. Mm-hmm. So that was exciting.
So you feel it's all been worth it?
Yeah. I'd like to think the Rotating Platform played a very key part in it.
I'd like to think that the nods that you received were for your work with this podcast.
I didn't win in the podcast category. I wasn't nominated in the podcast category.
Well, that's something scary about that.
But, I tried to lead the room in a chant of Space Arc. Space suck, space suck. I was like, who's with me? Space suck. And they were like, boo. I was like, you can't boo me. Celebrate me.
They know what's coming to them. They're going to be the ones outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, none of you getting on the space arc. And everyone was like, this is a terrible acceptance speech. Who's this raving lunatic?
Oh, well, sounds like a really good night.
Yeah, so it was good. I must say, disclosure, I've lost lots in the past. Yeah. I've lost for 5 years in a row.
But none of that matters now.
No.
You're up there.
So you retire now?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. It's really good. I'm feeling very smug today. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Well,
looking forward to spending an hour in your company.
Yeah.
So this is a podcast that exists on in some kind of world of rotating platforms.
It's called the Rotating Platform.
Yeah.
But so there are multiple platforms.
That's, I think, what we've decided. So if you can imagine a vista of platforms in front of us, and each of them is a different feature, or that's what we've been going with for the last couple of weeks. We should hop off this platform now and hop onto a different platform.
That's how it works.
That is what we have kind of agreed.
This is right.
Yeah, but first this. Okay, so we have either come onto a new platform, or the platform was rotated. We're still trying to iron out the details, even in episode 4. And we're now on a platform. I'll just squint down here at the card that explains what platform we're on. Oh, it's the 100% True Facts platform.
Hooray!
Yeah, so this week we've got 100% True Facts about the upcoming indie extravaganza, No Man's Sky. As beautifully demonstrated,
we've this year. Done our research.
Yeah, we've looked all over the not just the internet. I went to the library this week.
Did you
look at some No Man's Sky facts?
I've dug deep into the internet.
Yeah,
and so do you want to tell us what you found?
Found some things. So, the first fact I found is that everyone knows that the sky is actually owned by a man called Jeff Turpin. But focus testing told Hello Games there was no interest in a game called Jeff Turpin's Sky.
that was tested. I like it.
Yeah. So
iterated that idea.
That's why they changed the name.
Jeff Turpin's Sky.
Yeah.
I interviewed people. I spoke to elderly people about No Man's Sky.
Above and beyond,
to find out what was going on with this game. And I found out that there is one planet out there which, if you drill down into the middle of it, all of your dreams can come true.
Yeah, I think Edge mentioned that in one of their previews.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I don't know if you're aware that every animal in No Man's Sky quietly hums a different TV theme tune.
Another little fact for you. You're joined on your adventure by a robot called Complainobot, whose catchphrase is, "Oh boy, I like the last planet better."
He's going to make the game a lot.
That's oh, I can't wait. He's great. He's really great.
He's a wacky guy.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, No Man's Sky is very large. Mm. However, it makes it preserves the illusion of being larger than it is. Because if you go all the way to the left, you come back on the right-hand side, just like Pac-Man.
Oh, I love that feature.
Yeah, it's great.
There's been a lot of, I think the developers, being purposely a bit vague about your goal in No Man's Sky. It turns out the main goal of No Man's Sky is to kill everything.
Here's another thing for you. It's as you all know, it's got a very advanced procedural generation, and due to that, it's technically possible to find a planet entirely made of DVD box sets of the hot HBO show Broadwalk Empire.
Great.
Oh. Yeah.
Great.
So that's good.
That's good. I'm looking forward to that one. I've found that if you meet another player in No Man's Sky, what you have to do, and what everybody will inevitably do in this game, is jump up and down a couple of times, stare at each other awkwardly for about 2 minutes, far too long, and then sheepishly walk away.
Good. I sort of did some research on the original concept for No Man's Sky. It originally involved travelling between 18 quintillion butcher shops with all different kinds of meat. It was called No Man's Butcher Shop.
That's true. The game was recently delayed when Hello Games realised that they made all the planets upside down. So that's a real pain. All of them. That's billions.
Oh dear.
Good.
Now everybody knows there's some complicated maths and algorithms at work in the creation of the worlds in No Man's Sky. Yeah. But what not many people do know is that the answer is 39.
It's true.
Nice.
It is true.
I've got some more facts here. So you can name animals that you discover in No Man's Sky.
Yeah. What have you discovered about this?
You've got some good names.
No, I've discovered that to prevent troublemakers, Hello Games need to ban certain names of animals. These are some of the ones they've banned. I mean, they banned Wee Wee, obviously.
Yeah.
Barry Scott. Silip Bang. Bang and the Dirt is gone. Richard Branson's email address. That's both. Richard Branson's email address and the phrase.
Richard Branson's
email address. The word awesome sauce repeated 34 times in capitals. And the emoticon for sticking your tongue out and winking. All those are banned. Right.
In No Man's Sky space, no one can hear you scream, but there's a 43% chance they'll hear you sneeze. That's true.
Oh, dear. And it's if you stare long enough at one particular sun, you'll see the face of John Denver.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
The first person to explore all the planets in No Man's Sky gets to marry one of the game's developers.
Of your choice.
Yeah, I've got it here, yes. It's your choice.
Of your choice.
Yeah. I'm out of facts.
Well, I think we did pretty well there in discovering new facts about No Man's Sky. Quite obtuse game. A lot of people want to find out more about it, but we've uncovered some of its mysteries.
I'm looking forward to reading some of the write-ups in popular gaming magazines based on our facts, because I think we've revealed a lot of new information today.
We've got an exciting fact-filled preview just out of this.
You've done well. Great.
Quite exclusive.
Good. Oh, and now this. And as we land on this particular platform that we're on, we're sort of skittering across the edge. And we look backwards and we think, what have we been playing this week?
Yes.
That's what I think about when I land on this platform.
This particular platform.
But as you're rotating, you're looking backwards, but then you're looking forwards after a
That's true.
Rotation.
If I keep looking backwards long enough, it'll be forwards again.
Assuming we're on a
If it's disc. Rotating, which is reasonable assumption.
Let's not get too mired in the rotating platform.
and it's only the name in the core concept of the podcast.
Everything hinges on that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So who's going first?
I'll talk about what I've been playing this week.
What have you been playing?
I've been playing a bunch of different stuff, but the thing that has been occupying most of my thoughts is around DLC, because I finally got around to playing Undead Nightmare, the DLC for Red Dead Redemption, came out a very long time ago, and at the time I just thought, not gonna invest in this. I'm content with Red Dead Redemption as an experience. I really, really loved it. One of my favourite games on the platform, on the rotating platform, and
That's not going to get really confusing.
It's rotating 360.
It was a platform that did rotate for me. But anyway, I waited a long, long time to play it because I didn't want to sort of sully that experience. Mm. And turns out I was right. What a mistake.
You don't like it?
Didn't like it. No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, probably the disclosure here is that people of in their sort of 30s and whatever are not used to playing DLC, right? Or like, when we grew up, DLC wasn't a thing. You had the game and the game was complete.
Yeah.
And then along came this thing called DLC. And for the most part, it's either just a bit more bolted onto the game. You know, like the DLC for L.A. Noire is just sort of more missions, right? Mm. So that was good. Yeah. You know, it just kind of added experience. But then kind of you, part of you is thinking, what, could you not fit this on the disc then? What was the issue there? Or are you just trying to milk a consumer? Mm. So the other way of taking DLC is to do something really radical and different with it, which is, of course, what Undead Nightmare does, because you've got this wonderful open world Grand Theft horse world, Grand Theft Auto with horses, and inject zombies.
I think they put that on the ad, but yes.
And you just put a load of zombies in it, and you now have to headshot them because it's zombies. And it was in that period of games where everything had a zombie mode, or everything was to do with zombies.
Yeah, it became a kind of running joke with me, between me and myself.
Yeah,
right. That's the best kind of joke.
Yeah, that every game I picked up when I was catching up on a lot of games I've missed had zombies in it. Like so Mass Effect had those kind of things, you know, right from the start, had those zombie-like creatures running for you. Deus Ex, like two-thirds of the way through, was suddenly zombie mode. There are zombies coming at you. It was just
even
became a thing. Whatever I played.
Zombies came into COD around about that time.
Yeah, I wasn't happy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was just a kind of played out thing. So, yeah. And then GTA got on board, or Red Dead Redemption got on board, which got me thinking about games like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which I love. Not DLC, but for a lot of people's head, it kind of is.
Yeah, it's a twist on that.
It is, but it stands alone. And that I thought was wonderful because you're getting something completely different, but it stands on its own. And they've just kind of flipped the game on its head and imagined it was something else completely in a totally different world, which I think is kind of cool. Rather than getting their core world of Red Dead Redemption, which I loved, because it was GTA for grown-ups.
Yeah, you just
right?
wanted more Red Dead Redemption.
I did, yeah. I would be quite happy to just go but back isn't and it, play more
it,
on that.
Isn't it like a kind of a reaction to people thinking that, you know, Red Dead's maybe, like, as brilliant as it is, maybe a little dry, so like it's a different take on it. It's kind of a... Because, you know, Red Dead's quite a slog. It's all sort of everyone in it's, a psycho or a kind of deviant.
Mm.
And then it's just sort of like, hey, let's have some fun with this great action we've got.
I disagree, actually. Everybody's a psycho in it. What I liked about it was tonally it's so different from GTA. Mm. GTA, you have, you know, characters like Trevor and, you know, every other character has a raging psychopath in the full-blown sense.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of psychos in Red Dead Redemption. There's that grave-robbing guy and, you know.
Yeah, but it's more like, because I sort of saw the relationship between the two, as in Red Dead and Undead Nightmare, as a bit like when they did the Ballad of Gay Tony for GTA 4. That was like a very deliberate attempt to kind of to do a tonal shift because people had said GTA 4 is very serious compared to silly GTA San Andreas.
Yeah.
And then so they suddenly went, well, this is going to let you jump out of planes and parachute and all the fun stuff you love. And I almost wondered if Undead Nightmare was a kind of a similar thing to that, like a, you know, let's just go crazy.
Do you think, though, that Gay Tony was almost an admission that they'd kind of gone in the wrong direction?
Yeah, there was something slightly apologetic about it, maybe.
Yeah.
Not saying they didn't have to apologise for Red Dead, because everyone loved it.
Well, this is the thing. It's an apology for something that didn't need to be apologised for, because I thought it was so wonderful. Just be free of all of that kind of ham-fisted satire and blatant... kind of misogyny and ultra-violence and stuff, which is supposedly satirical, but it's not.
I imagine, it probably comes partly, it must be hard being a developer and, you know, finishing developing a game is, to one sense purposes, a nightmare, you know, the crunch of the last, you know, months or weeks or whatever. It must be hard to look at making DLC and go, we're going to go back to that world and make more of the same. From the developer's perspective, they probably just want to do something
crazy. Yeah, you do want to do something interesting with it. But this is where I'm kind of torn. I suppose I just didn't really like the direction that it was going. I didn't think that Red Dead Redemption needed that silliness because it's not like there's a shortage of zombie games out there, as previously discussed.
Yeah, it was the fashion. It was the fashion.
I was sick of zombies.
Yeah,
so this is it. I may even swear off DLC. There's only a few games that I'm generally not a DLC person at all. Mm. Like that.
What I think is interesting is like Nintendo's DLC, because they've had a big... they've been very careful to like avoid it because they don't want to be accused of like holding anything back. You know, they've always said we release a game complete. Mm. The game you get is the game. So whenever they do DLC, it's always like it's a whole new game. It's always massive, like that new Super Luigi that they had to do, and now they're doing the stuff for Mario Kart with all the new tracks and all the new characters. And there's another one. No, that's it.
What happened to that? I'm well out of the loop on this, but that amazing Dead Rising DLC that they showed at...
That's out, is it? That came out, like, instantly,
I'm totally out of the
loop. So that's for Dead Rising 3, so it's an Xbox One exclusive. It's it's like the Super Ultra Combo Deluxe Alpha 5, amazing Mega Lords edition.
That's its actual name. Like that. And it's kind of making
fun of the Street Fighter naming conventions.
It's a history of Capcom.
It's a bit like Ultra Death Gurra Mega Wrestling 64. I remember some talented young Spark writing for N64 Mag.
Was he an award-winning? only got one of those.
Deserved, though.
that's sad news then the Red Dead front, Alan.
A little. I mean, it was fun to go back to that world, but I kind of wish that I hadn't. Which is, great. There you go.
Oh. Yeah, so what a happy
onwards. Yay, right. Games!
Who's next?
I'll continue Alan's theme, not of unhappiness, because I'm happy, but I'll continue his zombies theme. I have been playing The Evil Within. It's basically Shinji Mikami's return to survival horror, and this is, of course, Shinji Mikami of Resident Evil fame.
Yeah. Resi 4, isn't it?
He did Resi 1 as well, but Resi 4 is, like, in my opinion, the... best ops game, one of the best games ever. So he's kind of like a hard act to follow, but he's basically made like the Resi 5 that should have followed Resi 4.
Okay.
He's made, it handles like Resi 4. It's got a lot of its ideas, the kind of, the over the shoulder, the quite kind of cumbersome hero, very low ammo, brilliant action set pieces, like really packed with ideas. Mm. But it's like Resi 4 set in like the bleakest horror universe. Because, Resi 4 is that kind of pulpy, cheesy, I've got to save the president's daughter from these mad monks. And you're this is sure. sort of like, it's all set in a kind of a strange world that doesn't really explain itself, and I won't spoil it. Not that it's a great story or anything, but, the whole world is kind of doesn't behave like or follow any kind of logic. It's all kind of twisting and you quickly like morph between locations. So it's kind of like a mad version of Resi 4. But it's a kind of, it's got like a big dose of Silent Hill to it almost. It's like if Resi 4 and Silent Hill kind of partnered up. So it's quite grim and oppressive. It's really dark. It's one of the darkest, like visually dark.
Oh, visually dark, right.
Like it's really hard to see. So you have to creep like everywhere because otherwise there's like bombs and bear traps everywhere. It's like some people say it's a real slog. It's a tough game. Like I'm not great at games, but even, this was really hard for me to do. I was really struggling with a lot of it. But it takes great pleasure in just killing you horribly. And it's sort of Resi 4 for sort of maybe like 2/3 of the time where you're, big levels, you're juggling with limited ammo and it's really tense. You've got to make every shot count, which is brilliantly, it's as brilliant here as it was there. But then the rest of it, it's kind of, he has a lot of set pieces where he locks you in like a horrible claustrophobic environment with some like horrible pyramid head-esque beast who you can't kill. And it's just about like, surviving it long enough to solve a puzzle or escaping it's kind of going for, it's not scary, but it's not like Alien in that it's got that unpredictable kind of horror AI element to it. It's quite old school. It's more like I don't know if you've played Clock Tower or the Clock Tower series, it was just like an escape game, it was on the set. It was like a really weird sort of Japanese curio. It's really, really intense, but I love it because the Resi 4 stuff that it's like, it's just amazing. It's like playing new Resi 4,
right?
And the headshots in it are just some of the grossest things I've ever seen. Because his big, they're not zombies, they're kind of, they're called the Haunted, I think. Mm. And they're basically people with loads of sort of barbed wire or broken glass stuck in them. So it's a bit gross. Ew. But you can shoot them in their heads and it won't necessarily take their head off, but it will take a big chunk of their head off. And they'll keep on coming, nice. like a third of their head. But when you get it, lovely. Like, it wants to differentiate between you've taken off a third and you've taken off the whole thing. So when the head goes, it, like, you've never seen so much gore come out of something, but it like splashes over you and then like runs down your body. It's proper, like, it's so horrible. It's but you, there's a bit where you pair up with this guy. This is like a fellow agent who has, you've got to sort of protect him, but he's got this axe and he's just this incredible badass. And you just see him in the background, just covered in gore, like hacking up things. And it's just like, oh, that guy's a maniac. Oh, what's going on with him? I don't know if I want to work with him. You're just sort of like, oh, I've got to make this bullet count. And he's just like, you know, legging it into the middle of the fray with an axe. It's huge as well, and it's like a 20-hour game. It's like a proper big, changes it up every 10 minutes. Probably some of the pacing feels a little off because you die so much that, like, what is a 10-minute segment becomes like an hour of trying to work it out. Right. But if you were to, like, nail it, I think you'd be, like, thrust through such a kind of roller coaster ride. And it's a cliche, but, like, I genuinely think that Mikami delivers on that roller coaster thing, and then it's all kind of like build up, build up, build up, and then you're like, and you're going around all the corners, and it's build up, build up, build up. He just gets it. It's great.
Oh, that's really good. Because, yeah, I think I only played like half an hour of Resi 5 and I was just done with it. I just was
not interested. Yeah, it's just right. Like, they just didn't, they don't have the stuff, you know?
Yeah, it was poor. So, yeah, it's really good to think of there being a new Resi 4.
Yeah, it's like much clumsier in Resi 4 in lots of ways. Mm. Like, the grimness of it, it loses Resi 4's sort of charm. The funny thing was, I did this, because I reviewed it for Mag, and when they put the review up, loads of people on, because I compared it lots to Resi 4 in the review, and lots of people went, oh, God, you know, why would anyone compliment the game by comparing it to Resi 4? Everyone knows Resi 4 is the worst Resident Evil. What? I was like, when did that become, like, a mad opinion that people have? I know there's lots of people who sort of say, you know, oh, GTA 4, worthless, and GTA 5, we hate it.
But yeah, Resi 4,
like, but they were all in agreement. They were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, everyone knows Resi 4 is awful. And he was like, No one knows that.
Everyone doesn't know it, because it's not true.
A divergent view. I mean, it's obviously going in a different direction, but
yeah. I wondered if it might have been because Resi 4 was GameCube exclusive and it was on PS2 as well, but I just wonder if, like, the because this was an Xbox site, I wonder if Xbox people didn't come to it until after they played, like, Gears and other over-the-shoulder shooters and then felt like, oh, this is a real backward step. Maybe is the only way that they could possibly think it was bad. But
there was quite a lot of backlash when they took away the GameCube exclusivity as well, right? So when they announced the PS2 version, a lot of people were like, right, well, we're done with this.
Well, the GameCube version's better, though.
But has PT...
No, it's I think what saves Evil Within from being, like, completely irrelevant is because it is a sort of throwback and it's old school, and it sort of goes, yeah, I'm all about, like, you know, you're going to run out of ammo and then a zombie's going to pull your head off, and that's as sophisticated as I am. And it's fine, and it's completely kind of fine with that.
Yeah,
where I think PT looks like it's reaching for something a bit more sophisticated. Like, that's the thing. It's not that we need an antidote to it, but Evil Within is almost an antidote to Alien Isolation and PT, which are trying to be a lot more clever, sort of emergent horror.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's sometimes when you play a game that's a few years on from when a type of game or genre was established, it just feels comfortable and kind of... it feels like developers comfortable with it, and it kind of lends.
And also, they can push it further, because I think the reason a lot of games, like, aren't as good as Nintendo's games is because Nintendo has endlessly worked on, like, one thing. Like, they have worked on 3D Mario for almost, like, well, you know, coming up to 20 years now. Yeah. And now everyone's like, how did Galaxy get so good? It's like, well, they didn't go off and do something else, which is what everyone else does. They go, we make 3 Gears of War, now we'll go and make something else. It's like, well, imagine if you made enough of these things, you'd eventually... Yeah. And you need the right people as well, and that's a broad thing. But
excessive amounts of
work. Going like, oh, we've outgrown this. And you're like, no, you haven't outgrown it. You've just run out of ways of, like, innovating yourself. Like, that's on you.
Absolutely.
Not the genre.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love genres. Bring back genres.
Yes.
We should campaign to bring back a forgotten genre.
Oh, Arkanoid. That would be a good genre to bring back.
What, the paddle?
Yeah, bat and ball. Bat and ball and a
bat
wall.
Bat and ball.
So have you played...
innovate on
there's
that.
One on, there's quite a good one on 3DS called Siesta Fiesta, which is like a scrolling Arkanoid where you're like a little bed and you're bouncing like a sleeping guy into like these sort of into pinatas.
No, I don't agree with this twist.
No, you should give it a go because it's like scrolls. Bricks, but the bricks also explode like pinatas, so it's a really satisfying like feeling to it.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Like, bring back Arkanoid. I tell you a cool Arkanoid, and you're like, yeah, that sounds all right. I don't know if I'm that interested. So I don't know if you're as invested in the Arkanoid genre as you claim to be, Greener.
Just the first genre that popped into my head, actually.
Arkanoid. I suppose its sort of twisted offspring brother is Peggle, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of true. Yeah, it's kind of like
an odd way.
It's like virtual Bagatelle.
Yeah. Bagatelle.
Bring back Bagatelle.
Did you ever have one of those?
Yeah. My grandma's Bagatelle. What have you been playing, Greener?
Well, I went straight... So I'll talk about briefly about a game I've been playing a lot of, because I went straight out and bought Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, okay.
So you were talking about it. So I was like, I must get into this. It sounds amazing.
I'm nervous now.
I love it. It's great.
Hey.
I think that is all kinds of awesome, that game. So I don't want to talk about it at length, because we already talked about it. But, yeah, it just feels genuinely like... a best of the last generation in a way. It's like Batman, Assassin's Creed, obviously, a bit of Far Cry, because you can get the, what are they called? The
Caragors.
Caragors.
Oh, okay.
So you can shoot these Caragors.
It's like
cages.
Weird music when you ride them. Yeah. Like a really strange sort of Enya-ish sort of like...
the beauty of this
you're
incredibly...
the Caragor.
Yeah, as we mutilate orcs.
Yeah, shoot people in the head. So yeah, a bit of Far Cry. It reminds me a bit of Saints Row as well, because it's got the kind of Assassin's Creed climbing up buildings, but it's super ridiculous. So you can kind of jump up like gigantic cliff faces and stuff and go
vaults over rocks.
Yeah, yes. Okay. And I did have a lot of fun doing that.
Jump
over a rock,
run
press
faster.
A sprint, which they must have gone, we need to have a sprint mechanic. How do we do it? what the hell? Just make it so you press A after you hop over a rock or a log or anything. And what I wasn't kind of prepared for, I know you were talking about the orcs and the army and everything, but how the orcs are the stars of the game, you know?
Oh, yeah, you're, like, so boring.
Yeah,
to them.
And the voice acting on these orcs, and because, like, when you're just kind of, like, on top of a building and listening to them all talking or whatever, like, there's just these endless different things that they say, and it's really well acted.
I gather it's going to be a very restricted experience on current gen or previous gen.
I've not actually yet seen one write-up of anyone who's played it.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't think anyone's bought it on.
Well, no.
Because the previous consoles are dead, Alan. Dead. That's why. You're in a dead man's world.
That was surprisingly brutal. What I'm trying to get at is... we haven't seen any material about what it's going to be like on PS3 and Xbox 360... You know, what is it? There's got to be some very, very good reason for that, I think.
I think it's just because
of... when you go in the world, it's got one orc in it. It's got two orcs, and then you kill one of the orcs, and when you meet the other orc, he's like, you killed the other orc! And you're like, oh, wow, this is such amazing emergent storytelling. Yeah, you think...
That's the only line of voice.
You're like,
acting.
Oh, this is how they've pulled it off. That's amazing. How did they
know?
There's
two. And then, like, when you kill the second one, the first one comes back.
Yeah. I can't believe it just goes on forever. It's like some Samuel Beckett play. It's just endlessly you killing the other orc and the other one getting increasingly despondent at what you're doing. Not
they
you again.
Cycle into despair.
I mean, there are some... I mean, I don't know... I presume playing it on PC means that I'm getting the full next-gen
Yeah, you're getting
experience.
The next-gen one.
It was raining... Right, there was rain. Looks really good. It's got that kind of that Batman sort of slickness to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, right, it started raining harder. I was like, oh, that's kind of a nice touch. Then I realised it wasn't rain; it was hail.
Yeah, the hail.
The hail.
It's got the hail looks amazing.
It looks like hail,
and it bounces
on the ground. And
oh,
I was just like,
so
just, my eyes and my. My mouth was open and my eyes were open. Everything was open.
Everything was open. Every bit of you was open to the hail.
Yeah. That reminds me of something I read just on amazed. Yahoo Answers, but I'm not going to go into that because that will get cut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. but yeah, I'm like really impressive. Well, I've done that thing where I've probably overhyped.
No, like, It sits somewhere between me and Greener's opinions.
I've heard nothing but great things about this game, which is interesting because nobody had any expectations for it.
That's part of.
It is still, like Matthew said last week, it is. You know, it's very Assassin's Creed and very Batman-y. But it does it really well. Yeah, it just does it.
So it's just a kind of good evolution, and like you said, Mark, it's very violent. Summation of that type of gaming. Mm.
Yeah,
so it's fun. Where do they go with future?
Well, that's the thing. You see, I think it's had such a good reaction. It's probably going to sell decently as well. I imagine Warner's will be absolutely like, let's go big. We've proven that. What does everyone like? They like all the next gen thinking. They love the Orc system. Mm. Let's go even bigger on that. Yeah. We won't have to kind of think about having a last gen version as well. We can just go all out. Like that'll be what Monolith. That's the game they're going to make now. I would imagine.
Yeah, can't
they've done it. They're a breakout. It's a breakout hit.
Hooray! Yes. Press the breakout hit button. Oh, we haven't got one. So I didn't want to talk too much about Shadow of Mordor, but I kind of did. But I've been spending most of the week playing that. But I did manage to take a train into Indie World briefly. It's not even a full game. It's just a little bit of fun called Boxcar Brats. Right, it's on that website Itch.io, right, where people just put little experimental indie games. And all it is like a top-down racer, and your kids in boxcars, go-karts. And you have to go as slow as possible. So the idea is you have to come last, right? So it's like mirror Micro Machines kind of thing, right? It's kind of that kind of speed. And it's not anything like this game, but for some reason, as I was playing it, I was like, bing, RC Pro-Am. On the NES. You played RC Pro-Am?
I have not played RC Pro-Am.
No, I don't know.
But I'm well aware of it.
Oh, that game. So I had a NES when I was a young boy, and RC Pro-Am was like the third game I got for it. For some reason, I think it was quite cheap. It's like a radio-controlled car racing game.
Yeah.
Kind of isometric.
Yeah.
By Rare.
Okay.
By Rare. And it is rock hard. Because it's still really good to play now, because you go skidding around corners. There's this kind of like really awesome kind of skidding.
Was it NES exclusive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And I think so two awesome things about RC Pro-Am, right? One, the music. Maybe I'll sing the music a little bit. No, don't mean what I mean is the music kind
sing
of
sing the music.
So when you completed a race. Maybe I'll put the music on at the end.
No, sing.
Well, yeah, I could do both. So you complete a race, and there was just this. It seemed like there were two or three bits of music and sound that were in perfect time, right? So you finish the race, and then you get this medal, and it would go do 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 do. Pause. Do 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 do. Beep. And that was the start of the race, and it was all kind of perfectly. I'll put on the real version.
No, don't. No, that's the. I don't want to hear the real version. It's better.
Well, maybe the listeners do. You know.
No, they don't. They want to hear you sing it.
Okay.
So be a new section, karaoke.
That's it. That's good. We should do that.
Guess the classic retro tune.
Yeah. That's actually quite a good idea.
I like that, but you're not allowed to listen to it.
beforehand, you just have to remember in your mind.
Oh, I thought you meant that we had to guess from just the movements of your mouth made. Extra hard. There was just that kind of drove you, no pun intended, drove you forward through the game, because it felt like the whole game was running to this beat, essentially. But incredible. So what was and the sliding mechanic, and you got to shoot missiles and bombs at people, and you had to, because the opposing racers would cheat. So your only option in that game, it's really twitchy, is when you see these cheating cars go zooming off.
It's so cross.
You have to.
Yeah. It's so cross.
I've seen Mark really lose it at cheating rubber banding. Yeah.
The story really of me and RC Pro-Am is that as a kid I got to the final race once, I think it's 50 maybe, and you basically at that point they are all zooming off at 10 times the speed you can do, or maybe like two of them are, and if you don't get them with a missile, that's it, you will never see them again, it's over.
Yeah.
And I missed with the missile on the starting line, and I cried. I just sat and cried.
Oh my god!
Because it was like
that's it. You were never
going to beat RC Pro-Am.
You know what we need to do?
RC Pro-Am
beat RC Pro-Am
marathon.
Yeah, RC Pro-Am marathon. Here we go, Mark.
Sorry, I've talked for a very, very long time about a lot of games I've been playing. But yeah.
That's so good. I liked you reliving that childhood trauma. Thank you for sharing that with everyone.
I think like sadness has been a kind of running theme of this.
I liked Evil Within.
Yeah, that's true.
I died a lot, but
it was dark, though.
Oh, it was dark, but it made me sad.
Try and play happy games next week. Let's make next week a happy week.
Happy episode.
Yeah. So, talking of happy, let's have this.
And now, as we step onto a new platform, a platform where we can predict exactly what's going to happen in front of us. It's all just stretched out into the future endlessly.
No, it's not working. All right. Just okay. So, what have we got, Alan?
Well, we're going to do Predict Toename.
It's Predict Toename. Oh, it's just, you see so, where it's so going simple when you put it like that.
Yeah, I get it now.
It's me and my high concept platforms.
It's not as bad as that fourth dimension stuff last week.
No, that was mint.
That was really weird.
So this is...
So quick recap of Predict Toenames. This is you get a phone with a predictive... element to it, and you just jab at it madly for a bit, and then you stop, and then you jab at it madly for another bit, and you let it auto-correct the two words, and that becomes the name of a game that you have to flesh out in as much detail as you fancy. So we've been fondling our phones frantically in the last few moments, and we have come up with such gems as... Who wants to go first?
Well, you've got a few.
I've got a few. I'll kick off with... Chubby peanuts. Chubby what? Chubby peanuts. That's a game. That's a great game, right? That's an 8-bit platformer. Sure.
Chubby peanuts. It
could be easily misheard. I think you're saying it deliberately to be misheard, Alan.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mark. You know me, always immaculately clean.
There's one word going through.
What you have to do is you run around collecting peanuts. When you picked up 100 peanuts off the platforms, then you get a bit fatter. And so big.
Well, I can see it being like a spin-off of Peanuts, the cartoon strip. Just like a fat version. Like with fat Charlie Brown. With fat Snoopy.
With Chubby Roy Brown, where his name is. Yeah, that guy.
Chubby Brown.
Chubby Brown. That's a fellow, isn't it? Chubby
Definitely
Peanuts.
Patty.
Yeah,
but real big.
The $1.99.
Everything's about money with me. No game can pass you by without thinking about how much money you're going to make.
You're lucky I enjoy the art of chubby peanuts.
You're lucky I don't put 64 on the end of all of them. That's my default position.
Yeah. It's stuck in the old days.
Yeah.
Have you got one, Matthew?
Yeah, I've got. I don't know what kind of game it is, but it's called Ostrich Bunch.
Ostrich Bunch.
Which, again, actually sounds like a really bad Kojima set of Metal Gear bosses. It's like Laughing Octopus. It's the Ostrich Bunch. You can see Snake going, not the Ostrich Bunch.
I think they're a group of people, aren't they, the Ostrich Bunch?
Almost like the Partridge Family. They're like, it's like the next door neighbours. It's the Ostrich Bunch, but I don't know how you work that into a game. It's more of a sitcom.
Yeah, I think that's okay. More of a sitcom. Yeah,
that's all right. It can be a spin-off. That's okay.
Yeah.
I've got Highway Bowie, as in David Bowie.
Oh, nice.
So that sounds like an awesome game.
He's been known to have forays into the world of video games.
Yeah.
Many.
So some sort of night driving video game, very cool 80s kind of aesthetic, a lot of neon and
Bowie on the radio colours. Or Bowie, you are Bowie.
You are Bowie. Bowie's in the passenger seat and you're driving Bowie.
It if you don't see him, he's in the back, he's behind you, you can just hear him like occasionally uttering like complaints about your driving.
He's just kind of going wuzzle on the back of it,
I wonder who was going to do the Bowie impression.
It's only a matter of time, right?
I just had quotes from Labyrinth going around my head. I feel like I better keep quiet. Okay, so yeah, Highway Bowie.
64. all right, now this is one. I was quite pleased with this, and it relates to something that I may talk about at another time. Jungle Gunfire.
Oh, yeah.
Jungle Gunfire. That's just a video game already, isn't
that
it?
That sounds like a super serious 1980s coin-op.
Yeah,
just...
that's exactly where I was going with it.
Yeah.
Jungle Gunfire.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got to...
Dolph Lundgren.
As the jungle.
On the top of every tree of the tree is Dolph Lundgren's face.
We didn't have the money to design palm leaves, I'm afraid, so we didn't have any money for fronds, so we had to use Dolph instead. He's like... license free.
Has anybody ever put Dolph Lundgren on the face of a dolphin? Has that been done?
Dolphin Lundgren.
Dolphin Lundgren.
No, I don't.
Fan
think...
art, please.
I don't encourage people.
I got another slightly bad action sounding game. Shotgun Patrick.
Now he's... Patrick, Patrick.
But that's what maybe he's like a kind of a, just an everyday guy. You know, it's like a working sort of, you know, sort of schlub who kind of goes berserk, like Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
He
becomes Shotgun Patrick.
Yeah, it sounds kind of serious. Mm-hmm. There'd be a kind of very powerful denouement to this.
Your wife being like, Patrick!
Yeah, like at end of Rocky.
He's like, what have I done?
That voice acting is pretty ropey.
Well, you know, we spent all the money on the shotgun sound effects, didn't we?
I've got the most boring sounding video game in the world. Rethinking Objects.
That sounds like a proper art game territory.
Or is it educational?
Yeah, I think it is.
Something like that?
Yeah, there's sort of very early 1980s ZX Spectrum, you know, packed in, you know, the kind of stuff they packed in with the Spectrum, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like Horizons.
Oh, yes, like Horizons.
Rethinking Objects.
Yeah. It's got to be thinking about things.
Super education.
Yeah. I've got something with a bit more. I've got a love sim here, basically. Mm. And it's called Seeing Trisha. But it is a love sim. So, but the twist on it is that you're in love with the television personality Trisha.
Seeing her on TV.
Yeah, you're just seeing her on TV.
Lusting after her.
Yeah. And you have painful. This kind of fantasy relationship with Trisha off the telly.
That's great. So I think, did you say a text adventure? That's what I'm seeing. A text adventure.
A text adventure. But surely you want Trisha's face in it, right?
Trisha's
face,
though. Yeah, forget that. Text can get away with anything.
That would be so expensive.
All bets are off.
Yeah. You'd have to use Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, we couldn't get Trisha.
Everyone's like, that's not Trisha, it's just Dolph Lundgren in a dress. I was going, why are you lusting after that? That's weird. I like the idea that, like, your entire relationship with Trisha would be, I don't know if in her show she has a bit where you can, like, phone in or text in opinions.
No.
And that's...
Maybe.
Because that's the only time you can actually interact with her, is you've got to try and, like... woo her.
You have
to
woo her through the messages, yeah.
But you have to make it look like it's part of the conversation. So if they're talking about, like, love rats.
Oh,
so you have to be, hey, Trisha, I hate love rats. I'd never do that to you.
I like it. You've thought this one through, Matthew. Yeah.
Brilliant.
You're going to win at this.
Any more?
Power Piggy, which just sounds awful. It's just rubbish.
Portrait Night.
It could be like
KN or NI or...
No, like night, like portrait nighttime. Night. But it could be kind of like... It sounds like it could be like a horror game.
Okay.
It's Portrait Night.
Yeah.
But I guess anything sounds like a horror game.
It sounds like a bit Luigi's Mansion.
It suggested a certain sort of late night Channel 5 type movie as well, you know?
Yeah.
It's Portrait Night.
I've only got Crashed Orchestra. I have no idea.
That's a great name for something.
Crashed Orchestra. When I first saw it, I sort of thought of an orchestra that's kind of gone wrong, like a digital orchestra, and you have to kind of like, you know, maybe some evil AI has kind of destroyed this digital orchestra. It doesn't make
what the hell is a digital orchestra?
And why were we all nodding sagely when you were talking
about it?
I just decided to keep going until someone went, what? It lasted a surprisingly long time.
Yeah.
That's arguably what we could rename the Jam of the Band segment of this podcast. It's Crashed Orchestra.
Crashed Orchestra.
Yeah.
Any more?
One more. Last one. Elector Merchants. Yeah, this is quite a sort of high concept satire piece about how you can put lots of money into your political career and that will mean that you are successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to sort of invest in the right type of support or the right type of campaign, and at the end of it you get elected if you're successful.
That's good. It's getting very... this is starting to become like a feature where we genuinely have real game ideas.
This is mostly the games I play in my head. Like,
That's creepy.
I picture these things.
I definitely picture that Trisha game. Yeah. Trying to woo Dolph Lundgren through the medium of, like, on-message texts.
Through the medium of Trisha.
That's
brilliant. Yeah. So yeah, we should. You know, I said about when someone sent in that picture of Snakeskin Blake, that you know, all we need now is someone who can make games to actually make these things.
If we come up with enough of these, we can invite a game jam group. Yeah. Say, do you want to do a game jam based on our Predicto names?
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah,
oh, that'd be amazing.
So we must keep coming up with more Predicto names, more amazing game ideas. But before we do that, this.
And now, with their latest performance using Jam with the Band on Nintendo DS, it's the Rotating Platform Players.
The platform has finished its rotation and it has left us on the underside of a platform where we talk about things that we've been reading this week.
Are we upside down?
No. Yes.
Should we speak backwards?
We've got those like magnetic boots from Twilight Princess. Nice. And it's a metal platform, so we're now hanging.
Oh yeah, this is getting more and more exciting, the idea of the rotating platform.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd mix it up a bit.
Yeah.
So we're currently hanging upside down. So before the blood rushes to our head and we're all like sick everywhere. Alan, what have you been reading?
Well, I saw a very nice piece on IGN where they spoke to different developers and people within the industry and asked them what their reaction was to when they first read reviews of their games. Because...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting because you can imagine with so much money and effort and time that goes into video games and so much rides on them as a company, you put all of your eggs in this little basket and you hope that it'll do well. And the reality is reviews do have some pretty substantial effect on sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting to find out different quotes that they've got, and they managed to get people to be quite honest. Because when their developers know, like, there's a really nice bit where the developer of Red Faction Armageddon, which was kind of a bit of a departure, mm-hmm. he says, "By the time the code is going out for review, you know where the game is strong and where it's not so strong. Armageddon was such a departure from Guerrilla, and the development of it so completely mismanaged, it was an accomplishment just to get that thing finished. Right. I don't think there was a single person on the team surprised by the scores."
Oh,
and of course, you'd never hear anything like that at the time.
Yeah.
Imagine if you said that on the back of the box.
that's your
Listen, guys, this is really badly managed.
Yeah.
It's got 4 guns and 18 levels.
But, you know, there's some bitterness in that quote, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, it's well worth it. It's a much longer read, but they also talk about the effect of Metacritic, which is much kind of is a very contentious influence, and the way that certain publishers seek to put a contract into the clause saying you have to get, you know, 85 or 90 or 95.
A clause into the contract.
Yeah.
I think that's the way Did I say that? It works. No.
Did I say the other way?
Yeah.
You can edit that, Mark.
No, that's the kind of thing I don't edit. I just edit the things that make me sound stupid.
So, yeah, the publishers want to put a clause into the contract.
Yeah.
Saying,
I'm not a lawyer, you know, but okay. I think that's the way around it works.
Yeah. Oh, that's frustrating. I'm sure I did that the right way around. It was right in my head. Later on in the piece, they're talking about how some games get high scores, but you just can't even think about what they're like. You know, they don't stick in the mind at all.
Right.
So, that's kind of comes cool. out of it. Yep.
Great.
That's it.
Right.
IGN.com. We should try and big up these, young upstarts, try and support them.
I've heard
where
of them. I think they might be big.
They might be big.
I'm bringing two things that aren't actually articles again.
Mark.
So just a little thing. We were talking about that. Do you remember I was talking about Turrican 2, Dolph Lundgren stuff a little while ago, a previous episode, and it got me looking into Turrican 2 and playing Turrican 2, and then I found Banjo Guy Ollie on YouTube, who, I mean, there's a lot of people doing covers of video game songs on YouTube. I get that. It's not like I've suddenly discovered single-handedly this this new genre, but this banjo cover of the Turrican 2 theme from level 1 of Turrican 2 is very, very good.
It built on you, didn't it? You know, because it kind of layers up. It's him playing all the different bits of
himself. Yeah, he plays. It's one of those. So he's got like 12 different versions of himself.
Oh, right, yeah.
All playing together.
The ego of the man.
Who's that dude who plays? It's a guy quite famous who does just vocal.
Acapella stuff. Acapella. Smooth McGroove.
Smooth McGroove, yeah. You're making a face as I say.
No, I just. I find it quite unnatural to see the same person over and over again singing in like a high voice. Yeah. I find it strange. I don't know, like it sort of scares me a bit.
He does a really good Wind Waker Ocean theme though.
It's strange. But there's the thing with him, he is brilliant, but there's always one part of the song which isn't as complicated, and that version of himself looks really bored. Like he's just going, like, it's the one that's going, bah, 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 bah. And his eyes are just like, I hate this bit. So like, I'm really jealous of the one who gets to pretend to be a violin, of the other me.
It could just be 16 twins,
16,
I guess.
Yeah, it's brothers.
Kind of, 8 twins or whatever.
Imagine that.
Anyway, the other thing, so this is kind of weird. I've got a future article to mention that isn't actually an article, but I want to kind of point out.
All right.
This weekend is the World Tetris Championships.
Oh.
And I think they are going to be streaming it online. They sent me an email because I've watched the film Ecstasy of Order, which is a film about the Tetris Championships.
Okay.
It follows some Tetris players.
Gotcha.
And it's a really nice little documentary. So they sent me an email because I bought their film. To say they are having the championships this weekend. Probably Tetris isn't one of the more exciting games to watch a championship of. Am I being unfair?
I'd say pro play probably blurs into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just fast Tetris is cool, but it's all fast Tetris.
I think from what I remember from the film, they kind of ramp up from quite a low speed. So, but yeah, it does get to the impossible speeds. So yeah, so hopefully if we manage to get this podcast up before Saturday evening, because probably America, so that's kind of the time they're streaming it, then you will hear me recommending it and you can go off and watch it. maybe.
Mm-hmm. If I don't That's get it, risky.
It is risky.
Recommending something that might be awful.
Or might have already finished as well by the time we get the podcast there. So it's a terrible idea.
There'd be some footage of it, presumably on YouTube and stuff.
Yeah. Actually, probably watching 1 year's Tetris Championship, you could just go back and watch last year's. It's all much of a muchness. You know, my advice, don't bother watching it. I've changed my mind. Watch the documentary. So that was Matthew. Have you read, heard, or seen anything interesting this week?
No.
Right. And now this.
And as we step forward onto the next platform, the platform engulfs around us to become an enormous spacecraft, which is going off into space. But below us, the world is burning and crumbling as lava surrounds the people around us. However, there is hope. There is hope.
In the year 3000.
In the year 3000. which is critical.
The one thing I asked you to remember to say before we started recording.
Oh, I don't know.
Things are feeling tense in the space art today.
Week four.
Yeah. It's week four in the space arc, Within the space arc, there is hope. There is hope for humanity because we're preserving all that is best and brightest about the world. And mostly mediocre video games that we think are brilliant.
Yeah. Mediocre is strong. Certainly not. We seem to have managed to completely avoid the absolute cream of the crop of video games.
In our desperate search to become, you know, to not suggest the obvious, it means we've left some blinding omissions.
Yeah,
which is quite impressive, and we're about to do the same today as we tackle the subject of arcade-style racing games. So not super realistic, not driving sim type things, but also not karting for reasons that.
It's a genre unto itself.
Karting, with a discussion of karting, I don't know, it would just drive me crazy.
Arcade racing game. So I don't want to spoil things, but based on, fully in keeping with the past weeks, if you're expecting to hear Burnout mentioned, you're going to be disappointed.
It's the obvious choice.
Burnout is burning in the lava below.
Nice.
Yes. So I'm bringing to the committee this... this game box.
He's holding it in front of him, listeners.
I'm pretending to hold it in front of me. I don't know why. Which has got Split Second in, the video game Split Second.
Okay.
So I think Split Second is just one of the forgotten, I'm going to say masterpiece, which is maybe a bit strong, but it's just a real forgotten classic. If you haven't played it, it's a full-on arcade racing game. It's it owes some debt to Burnout. There's definitely the idea of racking up a power meter by kind of doing risky driving. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it must have had an enormous amount of money pumped into it. It's set around this kind of fake TV show called Split Second, and the idea is it's a show full of, it's a race full of stunts and kind of like collapsing scenery and stuff. And it feels super epic. The music is really, really good, and it's got a real kind of like, it's not very video gamey music. It's very sort of Hollywood action movie music, and it's made to feel like it's kind of Hollywood action. And what's awesome about it is that you, as you do those kind of Burnout kind of driving the wrong side of the road and power slides and stuff like that, you rack up a meter that lets you trigger events around the track.
Oh, don't mention events.
Oh, why?
The event.
Oh, the event. we're so cocooned now in the room that I've always forgotten.
We're in the room. Okay.
Now things are getting hyper referential. I can't keep up anymore. So you might trigger, say, some falling masonry. This is a terrible game to pick, isn't it?
This is definitely what everyone wants to be reminded of.
Let's take a reminder of the death and nightmares of the calamity.
So falling masonry, how is that a good thing? Is that going to make your racing more awesome?
You can crush other racers.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But falling masonry is not even the half of it, because it just ramps up these incredible track-changing events. So the ones that I remember best are the first. So track one, you're driving across a sort of airport, and suddenly this crashing plane comes down, comes just screaming towards you and just misses you and just flies over your head. It looks amazing. And then on the second or third level, is it in Seattle? There's certainly like a building like the Space Needle, right? In Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle, yeah.
And if you trigger the event, the music cuts out. Mm. There's a boom, and then the Space Needle just kind of like just collapses towards you.
Whoa, hang on. Whoa, not in front of the people who can, you know, witness the world exploding.
They're pressing their eyes into glasses. Like, is he actually celebrating the collapse of famous landmarks right now? Is that what those sickos are being paid to do?
The actual Seattle Space Needle.
So, yeah, I'd like to bring Second Sight into the space side because it's basically a recreation of everything that we've witnessed in horror over the past few weeks and months.
But next time we'd be driving awesome cars through it.
Yeah, which makes it all okay.
That's all okay.
I'm a huge Burnout fan. Don't get me wrong. I love Burnout. I'm not saying this is better than Burnout, necessarily, but I think Second Sight is really awesome.
So you think it's good, but why has it sort of slipped from our consciousness?
I don't know. I think I read somewhere it came out at the same time as some other really big racing game or some other really big game. So it's a kind of sad story. And Split Second has just come onto Steam. I mean... Oh. Like 980 years ago, it's just come onto Steam. Yep. So, it's a great opportunity for everyone to go and buy it, make it popular, correct the fact that it's a forgotten classic, make it a cult classic, make it even more popular. So by the time we get to the year 3000 now, you would definitely be saying yes to it going into the space.
But that we're not in the mood like that. Surely says it hasn't happened.
No, but I think more than any other game, and I mean this, I'm saying it like I'm saying it as a joke, but Split Second, of all the games I've tried to introduce to Space Ark, I would really like to preserve. I think it's one of the few games that I keep on my bookshelf back in the year, before we got
back
resurrected.
In your
home. Yeah.
Oh.
Like one of my favourites.
Mm. So,
the rest are in the box.
Oh man, you've really played an emotional.
Yeah, he always does. This is his trick, you know. He was, oh, he meant so much to me when I was a child. yeah, Greener.
Well,
he's made a very good case for this game.
I'll just say it's a no from me.
Oh,
because I think it's gimmicky as hell. I think it's quite an average game with a silly gimmick. I think this is the same bit of your mad brain that really likes Excite Truck.
What's wrong with Excite Truck?
Because Excite Truck is gimmicky as hell. It's games which aren't great racers, but then have bits where either a hill grows or a building falls over. That's what you like. You like things that happen by the side of the track.
Yeah, I like a racing game with extra stuff in it, for sure.
But the core racing is not... Never
it's better than, like... I mean, people keep telling me how brilliant Blur is, and...
I'm not saying that. I just... I remember playing, like, a few laps of Split Second and going, oh, I've got the full extent of that. No, thank you.
It's got a good multiplayer.
Oh, I feel bad because you really made like a genuinely kind of emotional case for it. Like it clearly means a lot to you.
Yeah.
But I didn't really like it. I think it would just be kind of. I think it'd be kind of sick to take a game about environmental destruction for wanton, just for the sake of like making driving a bit cooler.
Yeah, it was from a time when we could laugh and smile at
in the face of the apocalypse.
Yeah,
you know, I wouldn't expect us to allow the film like 2012 onto the space art because it feels very frivolous now in light of what's happened. So
I guess that's a fair point.
I'm afraid it's a no from me, Greener. So it's all on Alan.
It does. I know. I realise the position you put me in, and I think you kind of summed it up, Matthew. I don't think it stands up. I don't think it stands out as an exceptional game.
I'm making a face.
I don't think it stands out among the genre, because you can think of several other games which have a similar kind of inclination, and just meh, what's the unique thing here?
I begin to see how going first might be an advantage in some ways. I remember this.
it's like a telltale game. Mark will remember you did not put Split Second into Space Ark. It's a no for Split Second.
Walking Dead spoiler. So I have to watch that being flung out to the baying crowd now.
But it goes out as it lived. like melting in wanton destruction. So, like, if anything, Split Second has the end it truly deserves.
I thought you were going to say it goes out as it lived in a sea of indifference.
in a sea
with
of lava.
Nobody noticing. Nobody.
In the lava ocean. So,
great. Right then, Matthew.
So I'm going for Beetle Adventure Racing on the N64.
Mm. Beetle Adventure Racing.
Mm-hmm. I'm not big into racing games. I won't lie. So I don't have a huge selection to choose from. But this was one I had on N64. It's one of the only games I've played and completed to 100%. Like, I got absolutely obsessed with it.
Oh, right.
One of its gimmicks is that all the cars are Beetles, which is, as someone who doesn't know anything about cars, I know what a Beetle is, and I appreciate that all the cars are just Beetles. So that's nice. Because otherwise, I always end up picking a car and I was like, oh, that's the worst car. And, you know, I don't know. It looked cool.
It's worth pointing out that there is a game in existence called Punch Beetle, which I don't advise anybody to play. But every time you see a car that is a Beetle, you have to punch the person next to you. I was introduced to this game in Mexico, where there are a lot of Mexican beetles. There are a lot of beetles.
There are a lot of 100% true fact there.
Yeah. It's any combination.
That's double E beetle. Yeah, not BEA. Don't do that.
So that's part of the thing, is because I don't like cars, and this has got cars I get. The other thing, it's got a really interesting gimmick at the heart of all its races, in that
two gimmicks in now.
The tracks they're incredibly layered in terms of routes, so they split off. It's tons of shortcuts, almost to the extent where in the three laps you could potentially do three entirely different laps and not repeat, like maybe repeat 20% of the course. And the big thing that it did is, obviously, you want to win and come first, but if you really wanted to get into like unlock levels and kind of get all the cars and things, there were these crates that kind of totaled up 100 points dotted around the different routes.
Oh, yeah.
So not only did you have to win, but you had to get every single one of these crates. So you'd basically have to master every shortcut, and so you'd have to work out like which was the ideal racing line, like which was the ideal route around these three tracks. Mm. And they were really like mad. There was a bit of a Hollywood vibe to it. So there's like a level which was a jungle, and it starts off and it's a bit like Jurassic Park. You're kind of going through big gates and there's like dinosaurs, but then you'd go off into like a cave network, but then the next time you did it, you'd be going through like a mad barn or something. And
it was from the kind of from the world of like San Francisco Rush kind of.
It was better than that.
Yeah, but the same. It was kind of outlandish, and the different routes. You know, you'd go down one route and you'd just be in a completely different kind.
Yeah,
of
it just at the time,
area,
like, essentially. It felt like there was a huge amount of variety to the tracks. Like, it really felt like you were exploring like a little world with each track.
Yeah.
It was quite slick. It was quite a nice looker on the N64.
N64 only, right?
Yeah, and it was made by Paradigm. It had, I'm pretty sure, the final car you unlocked, if I remember correctly, was a police car, which if you put the sirens on, all the other racers would have to pull over and you could just drive past them.
Oh, nice.
Which was like a real reward, that you could just like have ultimate power over the track. I think that I remember that.
And but they're all Beetles.
Yeah.
Okay, and are there ones with more power, presumably?
Yeah, there was one which had like a flower on the side. And so that is that's my case for Beetle Adventure Racing. Please let us take it into space.
It's an interesting choice. I think it's just kind of one of those games you go, oh yeah, mm-hmm. It's just a bit,
It's a nothing-y
but
kind of
why
game.
Why don't you, let's take it into space with us and you'll like learn to love it.
Oh, that's a good argument. Yeah. That's brilliant.
You've got time to love it, and I promise you will love it. Like, I love it. The other person I know who likes it really likes it.
The other person who bought it likes it.
Everyone I know who's played, it's got 100% success rate between me and my friend.
It is. I kind of semi-agree with Alan. It was a very strange arrival on the N64. It wasn't particularly well noticed.
No.
But that's not in itself a reason.
No. Absolutely. I'll tell you where I am. I'm a yes for Beetle Adventure Racing. Yeah. I think it was just a fun idea. You don't get many. I don't know. Video games at that point were becoming a bit. That they were just starting this into this world of being homogenised. Mm. And I think it was. It stood out. Am I making a super broad generalisation about video games?
No. I'm just really excited that my game got in. Yeah. I thought you were going to say no because, I was so mean about Split Second.
Yeah, I didn't play it a massive amount, but it was just a fun idea. And it just seemed to come. It's one of those games that seems to come from nowhere. Like, why no one's licensed Beatles like for an entire game before or since.
Yeah.
There's probably some weird, really weird phone call between a Beatle marketing guy and some guy he knew at Paradigm. Like, oh, let's make a game about Beatle.
But they probably, it's because they, like, maybe they hated it or something. They're like, oh, that was awful. Beatles driving through, like, ice caves and there were UFOs and things.
Maybe it was reskinned. Maybe there was some other kind of game and they got reskinned.
Yeah, it became Metal Gear Solid 3. Yeah. Yeah, that's the weird thing. If you really look at it, you ever wonder why Snake handles a bit like a Beetle? That's why.
You know what it was originally?
Why his bum lights up red when he reverses. It wasn't Beatles
at all. It was Dolph Lundgren. He finally had his own game.
Dolph Lundgren Adventure Racing! What?
And then they just had to put Beatles all over it.
So, Alan, you've got to make a decision. I mean, it's going in, so your decision
is going
moot.
In, so am I just going to be nasty or not?
Because remember, you haven't had your choice yet.
I know, I'm fully aware of that.
There is a political element to
you know,
this.
The committee is bigger and wiser and more sensible
you're right.
than that.
I know where this is going.
I'm hoping.
You always do this. You do this big talk about how you've got to be positive, and then like, your punchline is, it's a no. Like, this is your space arc shtick.
Well, I think that we should be positive, and we should try and be... Oh, I don't know. All right, you see, you've totally flummoxed me. Whatever I say now, can I abstain? I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Matter. I don't know. Ooh. Can you abstain?
All that means is that when it's in space, and people are like, oh, that's that game that Alan's kind of... Not 100% on. If anything, you are not fulfilling the contract.
Yeah.
So when it comes to like the feeding time, it'll be like, no cola bottles for abstentions. It'll say.
That is a very good point. I need my nutrition.
Yeah, so if you want to eat, you've got to make a choice.
Yeah, okay.
And that wasn't the voice of our higher committee. That was Matthew saying when he sees that you're not getting any cola bottles.
He's just going to stand in the way. Yeah.
I don't know what voice our higher power has, but it's probably not that.
I think we only get printouts, don't we? Was it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's delivery. Yeah,
we've never heard them speak.
I don't like that bits of paper come through the same tube that food comes through. Everything comes through that one tube.
Air, all the air we breathe, like that comes through there.
Like the ink off the paper.
The paper, everything. Yeah.
Like soap for cleaning. Yeah.
Well, but
anyway.
Yeah. I forgot what happened. Did you abstain?
I can't remember. I'm going to say yes just because.
Oh, yeah, that's the first thing I've got in, I think.
Three yeses.
It's like the first thing I've got in the space socket. Oh no, I got Paul Plotkin.
You say that every week. You got Paul Plotkin.
It's the first one in.
You bring out that argument too late.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure we've had three yeses before. Or maybe we
no,
had
I think
it
we
in,
have.
In the first week,
have.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So just one. So we got one out, one in.
One out, one in, and one still to come, which I'm going to advance Midnight Club 3, : Dub Edition, specifically the Dub Edition, which came out on the Xbox.
Okay. I've played this.
Yeah, you've played it, Mark. So it's an arcade racer in the pure sense, it's like not a realistic thing, but you are in.
Rockstar.
Yeah, it's a Rockstar game. So basically, this podcast is my love letter to Rockstar, pretty much.
A weird love letter. You told them that you hated Undead Nightmare. That's like saying a love letter to a girl and start it off with, like, your hair's gross.
Oh, yeah.
I fancy you.
They call, that awful word for that, isn't there? Yeah.
And it's a love letter surrounded by a lot of really weird jokes about No Man's Sky. It's just very meandering.
I don't think
it's going to work.
It's not going to work. Okay. Yeah. All right. Midnight Club 3, : Dub Edition, arcade racer. It's kind of a precursor to some of the open world stuff that you see later on with like Burnout and things like that, but it's got open world the elements to it.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's kind of important in that way, you kind of move things forward. Yeah.
Right, yeah,
you see where I'm going?
Segued into a point. That was good.
Yeah. It's got the brilliant handling of like it just handles very slickly. But there's lots of different type of vehicles. So you've got trucks and you've got motorbikes and stuff like that. And they all feel different and they're all different types of racing. So it's almost like three or four different style of racing games jammed into one. And you can modify your car up to an extent where it does affect handling. Because you get a kind of just stock car, and then as you progress through, you can kind of beef it up a bit and give it a bit more gas, but then that's going to affect the handling, or you can make it handle really well but then hasn't quite got enough oomph on the straights and all this kind of thing. So there's a little bit of that kind of Gran Turismo, what they call car porn type thing, you know, where you're noodling just a little bit of that. Now, the soundtrack to it's a collaboration with Dub Magazine, but for some reason, the music is to do with that. I had no idea.
I had no idea that's why it was called Dub Edition.
Yeah, this is what I found out when I was doing my actual research.
True fact.
True fact, 100% true facts. Mm. But very precious little Dub features in it. It's got part...
precious little Dub. No one has ever combined those words together before. Precious little Dub.
It's insufficient insufficient dancehall reggae music.
It's like a robot talking about music. Insufficient Dub.
Needs more wub-wubs.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a cracking soundtrack. Really, really great soundtrack. Because it takes... When I was thinking about racing games, it was taken back to one particular race that I had in this game. One particular moment which stands out now as I think about it. And this was a very long time ago, 10 years ago, whatever. And I got my standard stock thing... car, you call it, and I'd put a massive great big engine in it, so it was incredibly fast, but the handling was appalling. Mm. And if you go fast enough, you start to get that blur effect, as one of the first times in games that you got that sort of,
yes,
you know, things start, yes, it's coming consciously back to me, going a bit blurry.
Yeah.
And I was weaving through traffic. I was reaching crazy speeds and like threading the needle through traffic, through the streets of whatever American city it was. Mm. And the song playing was Nine Inch Nails, Bite the Hand That Feeds You, mm-hmm, which is very sort of exciting, heavy beat to it. And it's kind of, it's built. It's one of those songs that if it comes on once you're driving the car, it makes you drive fast. Right. It's one of those
like,
songs.
You gotta do a musical performance.
Like, yeah, yeah, everyone's done one today. So
do you want to hear my cover of...
do it.
Do 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 do. It goes kind of like that, but it's like
powerful.
But it builds. That's how it starts, and then it builds, and okay, it just kind of, and it gets very.
Give us a bit from the middle then.
No, I'm not doing this, Mark. It is pro-am.
I did RC Pro-am. You sang a little bit.
I can't remember. I sang a song about a Caragorn.
Yes.
A lovely ode.
An Enya-esque ditty about the Caragorn.
A Caragorn.
Mm. So I'm weaving through traffic and just narrowly dodging other things that are going on. And it's just, it was a very, very thrilling thing. And I just thought, this is going to go wrong at any second. And it never did. Made it through the whole race.
You're painting a very evocative thrilling picture of Midnight thrilling Club. I'll tell you where I am. Again, I'm out. I'm saying no.
It's not Dragon's Den, Mark.
No, I just wanted to say that.
It's out. You're in.
Yeah. Why? It's out. Yeah. I'm in, hopefully. Although I keep getting hints that I'm
out. You want to watch how you go.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because it's set at night. And you know, I have
made a critical error.
I have a huge problem with games being set at night time.
But
really?
It's all at night.
We talked about this. You remember?
Isn't it?
When we, in episode one or two, we talked about how I have a big problem with night time in games.
Well, it might have been zero.
Maybe. Okay.
Well, in which case it's got to go in.
No, I still believe that. Just because we didn't publish that
it's
episode,
not on record,
it's still part of my how I think and feel.
Produce the proof.
No, I'm definitely going to... I got really frustrated with it being at night time constantly. So, no. But apart from that, great. But the night time thing just turned me off.
This is arbitrary and cruel. No. Matthew, take
welcome
pity
to Space Arc
on this excellent game. It's a lot of fun.
I haven't played it. I swear my brother owned it and played it, and I watched a bit of it, but I haven't played it myself. The thing is, I always thought driving's the worst thing in Rockstar games.
I don't know about that. I mean, they're not...
I imagine a racing game made out of just GTA driving, and I go, ooh, don't really want that in the Arc.
I don't...
Be honest, because I'll be honest with you.
Wasn't it a bit slippy-slidey, Midnight Club? I have a memory of slippy-slidiness.
The handling, you can change, like, all the vehicles handle differently, so it's not all slippy-slidey.
I think it's too... If anything, it's too overly complicated for our arcade racing kind of condition. It's like a halfway house between that and a sort of sim with a kind of customization elements. It's a little bit too fiddly. I think what makes a great arcade racer is that you just have to kind of pick it up and get the feel and
I see what you're saying.
I'm really sorry, but it's a no from me.
Not getting it. Well, on that last point, I'm with you. The rest of it, but the last point, it's not a pick up and play. Level playing field type thing.
And that's the thing. I think we're going to be looking for quite from this particular genre, quite like instant entertainment value.
So if you can imagine those amazing motion blur effects forming around Midnight Club as it sails out of the arc.
to the strains of Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, do sing it and then make it fade out.
Oh, hang on, I'll see if I can do that. What is it? I'll do it now, listeners.
Oh, yes, yes, you're gonna.
But inside your heart, it is black and it's hollow and it's...
Oh, the space arc. So what was the result?
Just one in. The only arcade racer we're saving is
Beetle Adventure Racing.
This arc is becoming a farce.
You know, you realise there's a page on the rotatingplatform.com which we update with all of the games that made it in or out. So yeah. We've got to be very careful from now on because we're making a disgrace for ourselves.
We're like, I'm really worried that if we keep making bad calls, like we're going to get ejected into the lava and they'll just replace us with three like writers who know better.
We are a shoddy committee. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay, so let's make it a genre next week where we can pick some real classics. Or yeah, we're going to be If it is, we get paid in cola bottles, but we can't survive in the future on cola bottles. Or maybe is that the currency of the future?
Well, I don't know. Like some foods are gone.
Yeah, we can discuss this.
Pork pies,
Scotch eggs.
Long gone.
Yeah, after the Scotch egg crisis. Yeah,
yeah.
Of 2614.
Yeah,
that is actually correct.
Ah, okay.
It was 400 years ago.
Ah, yes.
And
yes,
it's year 20. It's year 14.
Yeah, it's very hard to remember.
It's the
year 3000.
Oh yeah, it's year 3000. It's not 3014.
Well, we'll put a space art timeline up on the website as well,
because it's quite important for people to know how things are going to play out for the next 1,000 years.
it's important for us to know where we've come from. And,
if anything, do you think people are listening to this going, talk more about what happened. Like, I want to know what happens. Stop talking about bloody video games.
Beetle Adventure Racing.
Like, we've actually got a genuine chance to change our future. We have a window on the future, and all you're talking about is like the room.
No, we should be like,
I feel we're more sort of Biff Tannen in Back to the Future 2, aren't we?
It's too dumb to understand, like, the gift we have.
Yeah, we use it for personal gain.
Yeah, that's true. And the gain of everyone who gets to play some awesome middling games on the space arc.
Middling. That's what kills me. We've chosen generally fairly mediocre games, like sort of 80%.
Yeah, I like that because they were putting aside three spaces for each genre. I like the ones that aren't occupied. Just means the room's going to be quite empty. It's this odd, weird games rattling around.
Yeah, because it'll be like a kind of plastic sort of case, you know, where you can slide games in and just these embarrassing holes.
And people will be like, has someone borrowed this and not returned it? And it's like, no, they just didn't. They'd rather not have something than save a cultural artifact.
Yeah.
Like they were that mad. They actually threw them in the lava so no one could play them again. Like, yeah. It's like that bit in The Simpsons where he's like, did you have, you know, Flanders says to him, you know, you cut my flowers or something, but did you have to salt the earth so nothing would grow again? It's like that. We really are, cutting off the nose to spite the face.
It's the equivalent of sitting on the aisle seat of a train and putting your bag in the window seat. That's just real low behaviour.
We're bad people.
But
we're bad
that's our bad decision to make.
Yeah, we are the committee.
And no one can reach us. We're locked in this room. No one can get in and no one can get out. So
because we are in trouble if they get in. Let's be clear.
They've really turned against us.
Oh my.
Good. Okay. Another amazing day in the year 3000 for the Space Art Video Games Committee. We'll be back next week with more choices.
And now, this.
What? Oh, now we're on another platform.
Yes,
that was good.
It's the final platform. All that's ahead of us now is darkness and despair. So we should probably stop here.
It's the happy podcast.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us for episode 4 of the Rotating Platform. And if you would like to contact us, tell us what you think, and you know, send us ideas and things, we would love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter. It's at Rotating Podcast. You can email us. We've got a slightly shorter email address now, trp@therotatingplatform.com, slightly shorter. And we're now on iTunes. We managed to sign all the paperwork for the for Apple Police, and now we are on iTunes. So yeah, please rate our podcast, review our podcast. So yeah, we hope you've enjoyed it, and we will speak to you next week. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.